Oh, hello. You're early, aren't you? Or am I running late? I'm probably late. And you know what they say, don't you? The early worm outwits the bird. And this bird was frantically trying to tend to her nest before you got here. But it doesn't matter. I'd much rather see your smiling face than my own in a polished mirror. Come on in, my love. Oh, and mind the bottles. I did say it was a bit of a mess. That's it. Just shift those off there. I normally hide away all my Take a Break magazines. Kick them under the sofa before anyone sees. I can't help it. It's a guilty pleasure. I just love them. Absolutely lap it up, I do. It's the top tip section we like, isn't it, Patrick? Yeah. All these people write in with a load of old nonsense about how they carry, you know, boiled eggs or something in their pockets to keep their hands warm, or use beetroot juice as a cheap alternative to blusher. And they'll get 10 or 20 quid for it. That's what they pay them, the magazine. Things like, if you want to stop your fizzy pop going flat, put the lid on. Or, no sat-nav, don't worry. Stick post-it notes on your steering wheel instead. Boom. That's a tenner right there. That's 20. I'm laughing, but I've got a couple of good ones tucked away myself that I'm working on. All you need is a big onion and some silk sheets. No, I can't tell you, because I genuinely think there's a bit of a pension pot in it for me. I really do. Or a patent. Hey, you never know, do you? You never know. Anyway, you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to go all poor man's Alan Bennett on you again like I did last time. Oh no, I've got the most intriguing scent and memory to share with you today. It was submitted by a wonderful lady called Alison Bender. And if that's a name you recognise, then it's because Alison is a TV presenter. She works in football, so does all the presenting and reporting at the matches. I had a lot of people write to me actually and tell me how last week's springtime tour got them thinking about their own childhoods and all the smells it conjured up for them. Well, this week, we're going to be looking at those early years again. Very early years. Days, in fact. But from a different angle. From that of the parent. And in this case, Alison in particular. The scent that Alison chose to bottle is that of her firstborn baby son. And no, it's not entirely what you might first think. And what's fascinating is that she only ever encountered this smell with her son, not her younger daughter. Which is strange, because there was absolutely no less or more love for either child. But perhaps this scent and the emotions it aroused have more to do with how her son came into the world in the first place, which I'll let Alison explain. But before I uncork this, I have just a little note of care for you. If you've experienced the death of a child or traumatic circumstances around the pregnancy, the birth, or overall health of yourself or your loved one, then you might find some elements of this story difficult. So please, take a deep breath and proceed with caution if that is the case. Here, have a whiff of this.
It's a really strange smell because it's not one that you smell every day. In fact, it's one I've never smelt before. It's incredibly sweet, almost sickly sweet, like candy floss. It's intoxicating, actually, and it's almost more than a smell. It's a feeling within me that's conjuring up a smell from nowhere. You can almost get lost in this smell because it's just so powerful. Roll your eyes back in like delight. And because it's been so long since I smelt the smell, it's fading. Each year it just gets a bit weaker and weaker. I know it isn't a smell I'm ever going to smell again. So I first found out I was pregnant. It was a strange one, actually, because I'm a very career-driven girl and it was all about my career. My husband and I, we almost waited a little bit longer, really, than most, because I think I was so caught up in my career and I was always waiting for that right time. And actually, really tragically, when we did try to have a baby, we had a miscarriage. And I think that's what made me realise how much I really did want a baby. Finding out that I'd lost that child. And so, obviously, when we were pregnant again, we were absolutely ecstatic. But I think the big thing in my boy's life was the 20-week scan. That's the time when everyone says to you, oh, what sex is it? Are you going to tell? Is it a boy? Is it a girl? And we'd said to our family, oh, we're happy to share the news and we'll give you a phone call in the car on the way home. We went into the hospital, we sat down and they brought up the scan on the screen. And I remember feeling nervous, obviously, because of what had happened the first time round. And then they stopped and they left the room. I looked at my husband, I said, something is not right here. What's going on? We couldn't figure it out. And then a couple of people came in and they were all consulting the screen. And she just said, we're really sorry, but there's something wrong with your child. He's got really enlarged kidneys. And this is a problem because he didn't have the ability to expel urine. My placenta would help him urinate, basically. But then the moment he was born, his body would not be able to do that alone, and therefore he'd have to have an operation. Basically, they were saying there were three scenarios. One would be that he might grow out of it. The second scenario was that he would be very sick, he'd have kidney problems, and he'd probably have dialysis and maybe need a kidney transplant. And then the third scenario was that he would die. You know, obviously our worlds were shattered, and it's a really hard thing actually, because they say to you, can you please say back what I've just told you? Which I didn't want to do, but you have to do that for them to realise that you've understood what the news is. I actually started with the first and the second scenario and then I kind of stopped. And the doctor said, and the third scenario? You don't want to say that part because you hope that that will never happen. That was a really, really tough time because I knew that I would have to carry this baby for the whole 9 months, not knowing the fate of it. And then I think the hardest part was to say that to my mum over the car speakerphone. I was scared. As I said, I was very career driven and I thought, how am I going to love this baby? How, you know, is it going to be really tough? And what is this scenario going to look like? I have no idea. And there's absolutely nothing they can do about it while he's inside me. All they can do is as soon as he's born, they can whip him out and operate on him. My husband and I are best friends as well, first and foremost. We actually lived together as flatmates before we were even lovers, you know. So, you know, we were able to have an honest conversation about it. It hit him incredibly hard because I think, as most men are, he's one of those people that likes to fix things and always have a solution for something. And suddenly, he was utterly helpless. And a bit like when I'd had my miscarriage, actually. I think a lot of men are really helpless because they want to have to do something and suddenly there's nothing that they can do. It was all on me. I just thought, I've got to do everything. I've got to do everything to give him the best chance. So the day my son was born, it was horrible, to be honest, because it was wet and drizzly. My waters actually broke when I was at home. And I remember them saying, when your waters break, pour yourself a glass of red wine, run a bath, because you've got hours. But of course, all of this just goes out of your mind and you're like, right, got to get to hospital. And then I arrived there and they said, you are miles away, go for a walk. We were in St George's Hospital in Tooting and we were directed there specifically because of my son's health issues, because they had the best doctors there to deal with it. But they made me walk, and I walked, no joke, I walked for 4 hours around the hospital car park in the rain. And it was just the most painful 4 hours of my life, without doubt. And my poor husband didn't know what to do. He was just holding my hand and trying to reassure me. The one thing they kept telling me is, like, as soon as he's born, I'm afraid he is going to be taken away from you pretty much straight away. And they actually said to me, would you like a bit of skin on skin time first? Or do you want him to go straight into surgery? Which is a really hard decision to have to make. And I said, look, you've got to do what's best for him, health and science wise. And I know that skin on skin is really important, but I need him to be healthy. So do what you have to do. And then actually, this all sounds so dramatic, but I started kind of spinning out of control a bit. I did not feel comfortable or happy at all. I said to the doctor, I don't feel right. He said, just relax, you're on epidural, close your eyes, go to sleep. And I remember saying to him, I know this sounds dramatic, but if I go to sleep, I feel like I'm just never coming back. I can't close my eyes. I just can't. I feel like I'm sort of hovering above my own body. So he did some tests and then he said, there was something up. You've caught an infection and we've got to get your baby out now. Suddenly he's pressing all these buttons and he's like, right, emergency cesarean, go. You know, all these people are around me suddenly. Before I know, there's like 20 different people in the room. Before I knew it, my baby was there. Then he was gone. I do remember them giving him to me for a few minutes. That was when I remember feeling, oh, like utter relief. I actually think I might have smelt that smell at that very point there briefly. And it's sad because I know there's a lot of women that don't feel that instant love. And I was really worried that I was going to be one of them. So I guess there was this massive relief, like, oh my gosh, thank goodness, I love him. That was definitely the overwhelming emotion for sure. The nurses wanted me to try breastfeeding if I could. And they said that it would be a really good thing that as soon as he came out of surgery, we tried to do that. Because I was apart from my baby who was in a different ward, they said every time he kind of woke up for food, they would get a porter to kind of come and get me and then deliver me to the special unit. And because I'd had a cesarean, which is like major surgery, I couldn't walk. So I had to be like wheeled up. And I remember that being really, really sad, actually, because a couple of times I was called. They told me my baby needed me. And I pressed my buzzer for a warden to come and no one came. And I still feel quite sad. That's the only thing I get upset about, actually. But just, you know, being in someone else's power, to think that he was there crying for me and I couldn't physically get to him. And that was hard. The neonatal ward is, the women that work in there, and it was all women when I was there, were just angels. It was an incredibly sterile place, so you'd go there. I'd have to go there every 3 hours, I guess, and I would have to scrub my whole body down. And it took so long, so even if I wanted to just pop in there for 1 second, it would take me 10 minutes to get in there, basically. My hands were red raw by the end of it because I was just constantly scrubbing with this industrial soap. And then you go in there and he was lying in a little incubator box, and he always had a needle and tubes in his arm, and so he was only ever half dressed. You did see other mums and dads come and go, but it just wasn't really a place to talk. It just was, you know, everyone just wanted to be there with their own child. And the nurses, like I say, were just absolutely brilliant. They helped so much, and emotional support, and just to see how hard they worked. Those shifts, I think they were doing 12-hour shifts and leaving at ridiculous times. It's actually funny speaking about all of this because I haven't really spoken about it before, but it was a really strange experience for me and my husband because we lived in a hospital for 6 weeks. When we realised that we were going to be in there for such a long time, they actually gave us a little room. It was just a bed and then a little pull-out bed underneath that bed, a chair, television, and a sink. And that was all we had, really, and that's all we needed. We weren't allowed any visitors, really, because of the nature of being a neonatal. So we just kept our heads down and had each other. You almost feel institutionalized. Like, I remember thinking, well, I can't go home with a baby. The nurses have been here and told me how to do everything, and I've got to do all this on my own now. Like, who's going to tell me how to do stuff? It just felt such a weird thing for me and my husband to finally be going home with our little baby. We had this kind of rocking chair in the nursery that we'd kind of painted for him. And then I remember just smelling this incredible smell. And I was like, where is this smell coming from? Wow, this is beautiful. And I was like sniffing around his head, his nose, his mouth, sniffing, lifting up his arms, thinking, where's it coming from? And it was almost in the back of my throat. I wonder if it was almost the smell of like happiness, relief, it's all over and he's here in my arms and everything's okay. It stayed around for a few months actually, and I remember thinking, please don't go. Just stay. Like, I love this smell. This is like so peaceful and lovely. But I could feel it fading, actually, day by day. And then there was one day and I just couldn't smell it anymore. And I remember just being really distinctly aware that that was it, and I would never really smell that again. Jay is 7 now. He is the most ridiculously sporty boy you will ever know. He's super healthy. Like some kind of miracle, every time he has a checkup, they say to us, they are amazed how well he's done and how far he's come. And so actually, it's an amazing feeling, because the other day he said to me, I'm going to be so much healthier than you, Mummy, because I'm not going to drink alcohol. My ambition is to be the healthiest man in the world. And he was going through all the things he's going to eat and all the things he's going to drink. And I thought, job done. So I'm happy.
Oh, Jay is going to be a superhero, isn't he? 7 years old, and it's good to hear he's doing so well. What I like about Alison's story is that at first glance, we all think we know that newborn baby smell, don't we? On a superficial level, it's nappies, isn't it? Whether dirty or clean. It's milky residue, baby shampoo, lashings of Sudocreme, and just a little bit of sick thrown in for good measure. I always think it's a bit like cracking open a new pot of Horlicks when you sniff that little scalp, isn't it? Ooh, and makes you feel just as sleepy, I'm sure. But what Alison is describing is something bigger than that. Like she said, it's more of a feeling than a smell that she encountered. All those neurons in her brain exploding like fireworks as she held her little boy close and rocked him to sleep and breathed a big sigh of relief. Her safe, happy, sleepy little boy. As someone without children, I can only imagine what it must have felt and smelt like on such an intimate level. And Alison did a great job of describing it so beautifully and helping me understand it better. But I'm curious, have other people encountered that same smell that she describes? While we were chatting, Alison mentioned that she's never really heard anyone talk about it before in the way that she experienced it. And we'd both love to know if you or someone you know has. Is this usual? We just don't know. Oh, I can't thank Alison enough for dropping by and sharing such an incredible story with me. And likewise, I can't thank you enough for turning up for each tour and sharing the olfactory with me. Yes, and you, Catrick. And don't forget, because I'll keep saying it, there's plenty of room on the shelves yet. Have a think of what scent conjures up the magic elixir of memory for you, because I'd love to hear it. Tell your friends. Tell your friends and tell your family too. Send me a message at theolfactorypod@gmail.com if you've got a story you'd like to share with me, and Catrick and I will get back to you as soon as we can. Go on, and I'll see you next time. Smell you later.